Welcome to Matters of Experience, the podcast where we dive into the ideas, innovations, and imagination shaping the world of designed experiences. From museums to multimedia, from architecture to AI, we explore how creativity transforms space into story. If you're joining us for the first time, we're glad you're here. And to our regular listeners, thanks for coming back and being part of the conversation. If you enjoy what you hear, please take a moment to rate the show and share it with a friend. It helps curious minds find us. So my name is Abby.
Hello, this is Brenda.
On today's episode, our guest is Alison Feeney. She is a senior project director at the Exploratorium in San Francisco, where she leads the development of exhibitions and learning experiences at the museum and around the world, which is what we're going to talk about today. Alison, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Now, for anyone who hasn't been to the Exploratorium, for me, it's like a giant playground for your brain. It's a hands-on museum which mixes science, art, and sort of curiosity all sort of combined in one. It's the kind of place where you can touch, build, and experiment your way into wonder and learning. When my kids were 8 and 10, they ran around from exhibit to exhibit, fascinated, asking me a bunch of questions when I had to remember all the science I'd learned in school. But I was hot on their tails, and I really enjoyed it too. It struck me as a place of learning and fun and entertainment for everybody of all ages. So if you're in San Francisco, I really encourage you to go down. Mm-hmm. It's so much fun. So I have a first question sort of thing. It's like, I'd love to hear your perspective overall on what makes it a special place to visit.
It's a good question. As you were saying, at our core, we are such a self-directed museum, and we want individuals to follow what interests them. So the space is vast and the collection is expansive. And it can be overwhelming, but the idea is that there's something for everyone there. And really what we're trying to build is a sense of success and competence in an individual that they have the skills they need to explore the world around them. But what's lovely about it is you don't need to know the terms. You don't need to know the scientific principles behind it to explore that experience. You can be driven by your own questions. You can be driven by your own imagination. And so the experience is very self-directed. And that's something that I love about working at the museum and experiencing and helping develop these exhibits and concepts, because it really plays into my own curiosity.
It's one of the things that I talk with my students about often, which is the need to be genuinely excited about or passionate about what it is, the story that you're telling, the exhibit or exhibition that you're working on. And I can absolutely see that so much of what happens at the Exploratorium is, you know, either a mini or a major passion project. Let's talk about the corridor.
Yes.
I assume it's a passion project somehow in some way. I would love to hear about this. Alison, if you could tell us what you observed was happening in this particular space in your institution and what were the challenges that drew you in to address.
The Exploratorium originally started at the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco, but we moved to our pier location along the Embarcadero in 2013. The museum had been there and it had been established, and we hadn't done a lot of new renovation to certain areas within the museum. And just like your home, it can get kind of stagnant. And so you want to give it a little attention, give it a little love to rejuvenate that area. And the time corridor was an example of that. At the Exploratorium, it's a little bit different than an art museum or a natural history museum. We don't have designated curators for each of the galleries. We have content experts, we have designers, we have sort of our floor is, we truly believe our floor is a laboratory. So people are constantly experimenting. We're studying how people learn. The time corridor at the time of our move had a curatorial team that designed it and set it up, came up with the content themes, had really deep discussions about what should be included and how we're telling that story about time and motion. Over the course of 11 years, that narrative kind of dwindled down a little bit. So by 2024, it hadn't had a major renovation since our move, and it had sort of lost some of the original coherence at the time. Also, at the time of the move, an institution like the Exploratorium moving from its original location to a brand new location, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of fear of losing our real identity. There were some moves that were kind of, we held back because we were a little afraid of trying to be too new. The idea is that we wanted to choose a specific contained area of the museum to explore if we could make stronger connections between non-interactive visual components like art and our interactive hands-on exhibits. So we were really interested in experimenting and using this space to see if we can make those connections stronger for visitors.
What was your process of concepting solutions for this particular space?
We did this experiment. We were able to fund this experiment through another external project.
Clever, very clever.
Yes. So we're being strategic with our budget. So we have a prototyping budget and a global collaborations project that's happening out in the world. And that project has a strong emphasis on the art and science connection. So we are building an art collection as part of that museum. And so we wanted to confirm some theories that we had developed over the design of that new museum. So we're just experimenting with these design concepts to see if it had the desired impact that we wanted on our own floor. It's a great way to have confidence in the design decisions that we're making for long-term future projects.
How big was your team?
We had a graphic designer, a 3D designer. We had a couple content experts. We had a bit of a fabrication team. Mm-hmm. So I would say we had about 10 people in total who were working on this project through the course of the few months that we were doing it.
The stakes are certainly very high in your case, which would, you know, certainly explain why you do the amount of testing that you do. But I'm really curious to know, what does success mean with this particular space? Ultimately, what is success? And is there such a thing as really reaching the finish line?
So we have a very critical department at the Exploratorium, our visitor research and evaluation team. They are so helpful in the room when we're designing an experiment like this because they will ask those questions. Mm-hmm. And then they will say, that's not a testable question.
Right, right.
In the very beginning of this project, we talked about is like, what is success? What are we trying to get visitors to do differently in this space? What would make us feel better? Like, this is a design direction that we really need to take, and it has impact. We had many debates about what is art, which, of course, is a popular discussion, but not all that productive. So in the end, we said it doesn't matter what art is. It matters a visitor is able to draw connections between the visual components, the non-interactive components, and the interactive components.
So the next question of story. One of the things, though, that I keep wondering about is because you had these pieces of artwork that had a rich history, right, and a strong story element to them, and, of course, you have your phenomena-based interactives and so forth, how much did you sort of tease out a narrative experience within this space? What did that look like for your team?
Early Exploratorium design philosophy, which is that you're wandering through a forest of experiences. You can choose where you go. The thing that I like to think about is that even when you're wandering through a forest, there's a path. So I think the goal of the space was to help create a more defined path for visitors to access that in a meaningful way and not dictate where they went, but make it really available to them if they found it interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, our main collection is mostly tabletop, interactive experiences. Everything can feel like it's the same height, it's the same density, and our infrastructure of the building is a big part of the design aesthetic. So it's a historic pier We have a lot of exposed beams, a lot of exposed wiring and ductwork. And it's like being inside a battleship, basically. You know, the inner workings of the building are exposed because that is part of our ethos, understanding how things work. And then on top of that, there were small, original, beautiful prints of Harold Edgerton's stop motion photography. They fit perfectly, really beautifully with the idea of capturing time and motion, but they were really getting lost. What we did was there were about 16 prints within this small gallery space. And we actually worked with the Edgerton estate to get permission to enlarge them and make them into light boxes.
Great.
And so now we have these beautiful glowing images of Edgerton's work that can stand up against some of the visual noise and activity within the space. So each artwork has a small description of what Edgerton was studying in that photograph. And then we include a process video of Edgerton working in his studio and how he had how he developed these prints.
Nice.
So what else? You've mentioned that sort of that visual in terms of the non-interactive. Can you talk to us about some of the interactives?
Yeah, sure. That space, we sort of divided into three different zones. We have a section around pendulums. We have a section about slowing time down that you can see it better, and then speeding time up, because those are both ways that we explore and understand how time and motion work together.
How cool is that, though? Mm-hmm. Just think about that. Like, that just blows my mind. How many times I'd like to speed time up, and how many times I'd like to really slow it down,
please.
The whole concept of time is like fantastic. And when you say pendulums, I think it might be a bit left field here. I think about my piano teacher with a keep time, Abby, keep time.
There you go.
Setting it so quickly. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't do it. So mixed emotions towards pendulums.
The idea of periodic motion and time and how that works, how you can explore that, how it kind of plays into clocks and our construction of time in general. We have ways to freeze a drop of water in motion with a high-speed camera, so you can create your own water drop photography. We've got a lot of artworks in this exhibition area that also explore slowing down time or speeding time up, including video work by Sam Taylor Wood. She's a well-known director. Her piece called Still Life is an exploration. It's a four-minute video, a time-lapse video of a bowl of fruit rotting to remind us of death.
Let's go beyond the corridor. Let's really look at the whole museum, the whole institution unto itself. And such a unique kind of space. It's designed differently than most museums or interpretive institutions or science centers. Yet there are stories within the design work that you do, right? We've got phenomena in the world around us, science, technology. They're all about the narrative of our lived experience. Like, essentially, as I see it, the Exploratorium is the story of experience in so many ways. And I'm curious, do you see the Exploratorium as a storytelling place? And if so, how?
Because we're an interactive museum, the focus of your experience at the museum is your process of learning. And so what better way to encourage that than to show other people's process of learning? And so I think it's the more we can bring that human story into our narratives, into our exhibitions, the more powerful it gets. We do that a lot through our staff facilitation.
Sure.
And maybe less directly with storytelling elements on our floor, because that is, as you said, that's the root of the Exploratorium, is understanding the world around us, understanding what makes us human.
I wonder if, like, so for people listening, is there any advice? Because for me, it sounds like you basically went back to basics, right? And you made sure sort of the less is more. You really curated the space and made things nice and visible. Anything like from your opinion, like something very top line that our designers, curators, people working in museums could take away based on this experiment?
So one way that I was framing this conversation with the team early on is that there are extroverted museum experiences and there are introverted museum experiences. And you have to create conditions that extroverts and introverts both thrive in. When we had a very extroverted experience, we wanted to give that its own space and not try to crowd out an introverted experience that, you know, required a visitor to go up and spend a little bit more time with that piece. So really thinking about the conditions that help experiences not compete with each other and really amplify the benefits, because every kind of person comes to the museum. So you need to create conditions and experiences where people can find what's speaking to them.
Yeah.
And so I think that was really the goal here, was to let those introverted experiences shine and not be overpowered by the plethora of extroverted experiences within the space.
I am so going to use that framework. I think it's such a useful and thoughtful way of thinking about experience design.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely.
It's absolutely fantastic. I just want to jump in for a sec. Is that different? So kids run around, they're used to playing, right? They play to learn. So they're on overdrive for that. When you get to be an adult, we're playing a lot less. And even play for some people is looked down on, not encouraged, not in this space. I understand we're big into play. But as adults in your space, we're not accustomed to playing with things still. I mean, I'm not talking about sports. I'm talking about being in a space and playing, touching, moving, you know, potentially breaking things. Do you see adults struggling to play, to experiment? Are they happier to stand and watch because that's a safe space? And if so, how do you encourage them to be curious? Because I think it's a lot easier with kids because they just touch anything and do anything, climb and everything. But adults, I would imagine, are of more challenging.
Well, developmentally speaking, and for some good reasons, we actually kind of develop out of that a little bit. And it takes some work to keep that muscle alive, mm-hmm. Or really flourishing. But what do you think, Allison?
I think it's really important to put adults in the position of learners. Mm-hmm. That is something that we really focus of our work, because we do fall out of that practice. Learning through play is like a critical process of being human. We try to find those avenues of invitation. I think adults look for permission to do that, whether that's watching somebody else do it and then feeling, okay, that's allowed. I can do that. I'm going to experiment with that. Sometimes children are the great way to break down that barrier for an adult, because a child doesn't have that kind of those qualms of holding back. And an adult can watch a child and then say, oh, you know, that looked interesting. I can dive in. Yeah. We, of course, have our adult nights every Thursday night where we have 18 and older at the museum, and people are playing just as hard as the kids. It's something that when we work with partners around the world, it's where we start. We always do learning activities with our partners throughout the process to remind them of what it means to be a learner, what it means to not necessarily know what the next step is, to have to come up with your own question, to be in an uncomfortable situation of like, oh, that didn't work like I thought it was going to work. Did I, you know, like kind of reconciling with that sense of that didn't work, but I'm going to keep moving forward. So I do think that it is something that we lose as we get older, but it's not something that can't be reintroduced.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, Brenda, that we lose it on purpose, like there's a solution. Why is that?
I mean, out of necessity, or as I understand it, out of necessity, we learn things, right? And then we don't necessarily need to keep relearning the same thing, right? Over and over and over again. And we create shortcuts. And through this process and over the course of years, developmentally speaking, it's a little bit more efficient to not constantly be in a state of wonderment, right? And curiosity can really kind of lose, we can kind of lose that. I think of it as a muscle. And there are things that, and I talk with my students about this a lot, we do a lot actually to try and really rebuild and build up the muscle of curiosity, mm-hmm. Specifically in the classroom and through the stuff that we do, because I think that you can turn it on, I believe. And absolutely. And it sounds like you get to see that happen a lot, which is so enviable.
Yeah. What are some of the fun stories of visitors to the Exploratorium? Has anybody ever said anything, any feedback, any moments you remember from your tenure there where it's moved you?
We recently had a temporary exhibition on AI this summer. It was a really incredible exhibition that kind of approached AI in a unique way, as the Exploratorium tends to do with topics. But there was a lot about kind of breaking down the black box that is AI, like what are the processes that it goes through and how do we interact with it and what does that mean for us? And I was on the floor and I had an older woman who's probably in her 70s come up to me and she said, I heard that there was an AI exhibition and I really want to see it. Can you show me where it is? And so I was like, of course, I'll walk you down there. And she was like, I came because I really want to know how ChatGPT speaks to me like a person. And I and I was like, okay, here we go. Here's this, you know, the exhibition is built around what learning looks like for a machine. Here's different ways that you can play with it. Here's how technology has evolved over time. Here are some of the worries that people have about AI. And you are explore, experiment, see what comes out for you about this, how it, see if it helps answer that question. Like, we will never really know how ChatGPT speaks to us like a human because that is a black box. That's a proprietary piece of software. But, you know, the basics, the concepts of how this technology came about, there are all these different ways that you can interact with it and build an understanding of that. So I just love that, that she had come with a very specific question in mind, mm-hmm. and she really was seeking an answer for that. And hopefully she found some new questions and some ways of answering that particular question that she had.
Well, in my mind, I imagine she went back and then had a discussion with ChatGPT about about what she thought.
Here's what
she
I learned about you. Let me tell you.
You never really know how a visitor is engaging with like what's happening while they're engaging with an exhibit. And I remember we had this prototype on our floor that was extremely loud. And while I was sitting at my desk, I could just hear somebody wailing at this exhibit. And I was like, I have to figure out what's going on. So I went downstairs and there was this probably about 10-year-old boy playing with the exhibit. He was really, really going at it. It was about centrifugal force. So, you know, really pulling on this thing to make it do it, what it was doing. And it was rocking and making all this noise. And I went up to him. I was like, so what are you learning here? And he's like, he told me this incredible narrative that he had constructed about this experiment that he was doing at this particular exhibit. And I was like, keep going.
Mission accomplished. Mission accomplished.
I was just, you know, I had to be curious about what was causing this racket. And then I found something really compelling.
I think that's what's so amazing. I mean, not a lot of museums can say that, that they heard somebody making so much noise. And in that, there was like a lot of learning and fun. Mm-hmm. And overall, like for me, it's about creating memories, things people won't forget. And at the Exploratorium, everybody, I remember one of my favorite was, it's the friction. So everybody who goes there comes away with definitely some fundamental memory linked with, in my case, science. And I think for me that going back to basics, telling the narrative, focusing on the narrative, that lovely idea of the introversion, the extroversion of the moments, all works really well to help create those incredible memories.
Absolutely.
Thanks to everyone who tuned in. We hope you'll subscribe to Matters of Experience wherever you get the podcasts. Leave us a review, share with a friend, and join us next time.
Matters of Experience is produced by Lorem Ipsum Corp. and recorded at Hanger Studios. Tune in next time for more fun discussions about experience design.